Hey, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 178, White's Rebellion. My name's Dick Newman, and remember this guy?
Charge! Cry God for Harry! England and St. George!
Yeah, mighty hero Henry V right there. And all other nations have been jealous of England forever for having such a mighty hero when we haven't. But today, Australians have got their own mighty hero. Yes, it's Scotty from Marketing who got the Legion of Merit for Leadership from King Donald I of the USA. Apparently, it's a prestigious US military honour. Prestigious. There you go. So it just proves that sucking up to the USA by sending troops to Afghanistan and picking a fight with China has paid off. We've got a mighty hero, Scotty from Marketing, and we're all very proud of you, lad. Let's get on with it. Gloria Gaynor there, 1979, letting us know that she's going to survive this episode. I wonder how the others will go. Last week, we got our girl king, all official, with some holy massaging of the titties and a silly hat on. Check the state of play in England to make sure life is still shitty for common smelly types. It is. I don't know why we really checked on that. It's always shitty for common smelly types. Mary seemed to be off to a good start, but she wants a man in her life. So we had a look at Phil, Super Sausage Chuck's lad, Mary's second cousin. We found that Phil has pretty much zero fans around the place. People think he's a shit sandwich without the bread. But he does run the lowlands, and we like trade with the lowlands, so, hey, Phil's okay for the English. Just a little interlude, though, because I've got a poem, and you know how I hate that shit, so let's get it out of the way. Yow that these beasts do well behold and see, may deem with ease wherefore here may they be, with border eke wherein they may be found, four brothers' names who list to search the ground. Yeah, not very good as usual. If you, my dear listener, ever pop into the Tower of London, first floor of the Beauchamp Tower, then you'll see lots of graffiti carved by various prisoners. That poem was inscribed by Guildford Dudley, son of the recently executed John Dudley and husband of Lady formerly Queen Jane Grey. Under that, he carved botanicals for his brothers, a rose for Ambrose, gillyflowers for himself, oak leaves for Robert and honeysuckle for Henry. He also carved the name Jane. That's very sweet, but I'm not sure why he was being sweet. Jane had said fuck you to Guildford when Guildford wanted the formal title king. Guildford is writing poetry while in the slammer. Close by, Jane is writing a treatise about baby Jesus. Guildford will see that treatise and add a postscript asking God to look after his dad, John Dudley. Yeah, he forgot to ask God to look after John on earth, but I'm sure God is looking after John in heaven. You may have thought that Guildford would have written, hey, thanks for marrying me to Jane, Dad, now I'm in the slammer and maybe having my head off. Now, Guildford's mum, though, is looking out for him. She's trying to get him out of the slammer, and while he's in there, she's providing top tucker, nice booze, and plenty of servants to help him pick his nose, or whatever nobles get servants to do. His brothers are also in the slammer, and they'll meet plenty of times, these lads, at the lieutenant's dining table. Yeah, if you're ever in charge of a slammer and you get some rich noble prisoner, you invite him to dinner frequently because they provide nice food. We'll get this from a chronicle. John Cork, Lancaster Herald, sometimes servant to this Duke, begged of Queen Mary to bury the head of his old master in the Tower of London, which was granted him, with the whole body performed accordingly. In remembrance whereof, the said Lancaster did ever bear for his crest a bear's head silver crowned with gold. Very nice, and of course the Duke he's burying is John Dudley, St. Peter ad Vincula in the Tower, and they put him right next to Ted Seymour, who Dudley had put there. Bit off, I think. There will be comings and goings at the Tower. Dudley supporters like Lord Grey, Duke of Suffolk, will be let out, while people causing religious disturbances are let in. The news that Mary was looking at loser Phyllis Spain was not well received in England amongst the common types. Merchants might like the whole lowlands trade thing, but yeah, common types aren't liking this at all. Country priests will be roughed up, unhappy pamphlets distributed. A dead dog that had got the monkey type tonsure haircut will be tossed through a window at the palace, and it's so hot for Stephen Gardiner boo hiss that he's had to move into the palace for his own security. This is bad news for the Dudley boys. The council are calling for a quick end to all traitors, and John Dudley Jr. has already been indicted for treason. Back to Mary and getting married. Mary said getting married had never crossed her mind before she was queen, to which we say, liar, liar, pants on fire. She's been betrayed dozens of times, so she surely had thought about marriage before now. Now she says she'd rather be a virgin queen, while negotiating with the ambassador and making it clear to the council that, yeah, she is going to marry. It's not just Philip Spain who's there. We've got other Chuck guys. Duke of Savoy, Emmanuel Philibert, who is in exile and would love to cozy up in a nice palace in England. Only Paget is supporting him. Doing better is Archduke Ferdinand, son of Chuck's brother Ferdinand. He's proposed by his chamberlain and has a few supporters on the council, plus Anna Cleves is talking this guy up. Mary is just sending hints back to Chuck saying, look, just name Phil. Say Phil. Phil's the good one. Tell us that. Now, Chuck is actually trying to get Phil married into Portugal again. But Phil's about as popular in Portugal as everywhere else, so the Portuguese are just using delaying tactics rather than risk upsetting Chuck by saying, your lad's a dick and we ain't having him for our princess. I will offer Phil just small change as dowry. That's a bit of an insult. And at the same time, Phil will get a letter from Chuck saying, tell the Portuguese you'll marry Mary if they don't stop fucking you around. Phil will write back saying, if you wish to arrange the English match for me, you know that I am so obedient a son that I will have no other will than yours, especially in a matter of such high import. And your news arrived just at the right moment, for I decided to break off the Portuguese business. There you go, Portuguese things done and dusted. In comes the Imperial Ambassador Mary. Hey Mary, Supersauce Chuck would love to marry you himself, except he's old, decrepit and pretty fucked. Because he can't do it himself, he's offering Prince Phil, who I'm sure you know is hugely popular all over the place. Mary will say, oh, I'll tell Chuck I'm totally grateful. This is way, way more than I deserve. Okay, now you've got that, let's go off the record. I'm not sure how my poms are going to take this. You know how they feel about foreigners, particularly garlic-eating Wogdago Spaniard types. He's going to have to come and live here, which should be okay for now, but what about when Chuck dies? He'll have to go and pretend to run shit in Spain. It's not just this. It does seem that Mary was actually the real deal virgin. Zero experience in the baby-making stuff, so if a lady listener would care to pop in a TARDIS, I'm sure you'd be welcome to go back and explain to Mary what goes where. Plus, she's 11 years older than Phil. He might not fall head over heels in love with her. She'll tell the ambassador, let Phil know that if he isn't up for a banging after they get married, then that'll be okay. She also needs to set down the ground rules for running England. Mary will be all good with obeying Phil, but, yeah, Phil won't be getting a say in government. If he tries, then, yeah, fucking watch out, mate. Now, the ambassadors won't make any promises, but he can see the point. Mary apparently doesn't know a thing about Phil, even though just outside the window, people are getting stirred up and gossiping about what a dick he is. The Flanders mob are also getting a bit agitated, on the basis that when Chuck dies, they'll get that fucking field around them. No fucking way will we be having that, Dick, is the sentiment. They want Archduke Ferdinand. Even in Spain, Ferdinand's opinion polls are way better than Phil's. Now, Phil has also a reputation for fucking around with the chicky babes. Even Chuck can't deny it, but he's on the boys will be boys bullshit stuff. All things considered, Mary will do the prudent thing and ask if you can meet Phil before things go too much further. Ambassador won't be having that, no, no, no. He'll say, look, Mary, I know this all looks like it's Chuck's idea, but Phil came up with it all by himself. He is just dying to marry you. Okay, says Mary, now level with me. Is Phil all you've made him out to be, or is he a dickwit? On my honour and my life, he has qualities as virtuous as any prince in this world. Yeah, never trust an ambassador, my dear listener. They are paid to be charming and to lie to you. That's their income. That's how they make a living, being charming and lying. Off goes the ambassador to chat privately with various council members. He's already got Paget on board, and these lucky councillors will get a handwritten, personalised letter from Chuck. Yeah, handwritten by secretaries and issued to ambassadors with the salutations left blank. Great, they get a personal letter and gold chains and other stuff, including straight-out cash. Oh, we love that stuff. He doesn't have to make any promises. The money's good enough. To seal the deal, he will tell the four most likely big-swinging dicks that any time Mary is out of town, they can be joint regents. He'll write to Chuck saying, oh, fuck, these English are easy. Just dangle toys and cash in front of them and they'll do whatever you want. Mary will do some deep thinking, a shit ton of praying and even some boo-hoo-hooing and decide, yes, Phil is the man of her dreams. 28th of October and Mary will pull a sickie. 29th of October and she'll call for the ambassador. In he goes, expecting to find a queen in a sickbed. Instead, here's Mary in a best frock with all the top servants all polished up to look good. Mary will say, I prayed and prayed and prayed and had my good boo-hoo-hoo and asked the magic bread to show me the way, and it sat there doing absolutely fucking nothing, which is a sure sign I should marry Phil. Now watch me do the sacred vow in front of the bread without yeast. I swear to marry Dago Phil and love him perfectly, and I will never, ever change my mind. And with that, Mary is bound to the wanker that the Portuguese rejected. And yes, I started here by mistake. So we're back to the start of the episode, where people will be more than a bit displeased by the news. At least they're not as rude as me calling him a Dago. No, it's Jack Spaniard at the time. That's the insult. Jack Spaniard, big insult. Mind you, just to show that they're whateverist, it's all Spaniards are thieves. Everybody knows that. Then after they rob you, they'll probably kill you just for a giggle. Every one of them, even the common smelly Spaniards, demands you call them Lord, or in their Gaelic-y language, Señor. Everyone knows you have to lock up your daughters, your wives, even your grannies when they call because they fuck like bunnies. Phil will be sure to bang around and treat Mary like an old pair of shoes, and we'd all rather die than let a Spaniard run the place. And you know what they're like. We'll be overrun with the fuckers coming here and taking our jobs, and they'll use us as a dumping ground for their peddlers and their lousy loiterers, each one with a bottle of cheap shit vino around their necks. There'll be piss Spaniards everywhere, and then the palace will be open to beggars, slaves, and all sorts of wretches. And before you know it, there'll be shops in the palace to sell bread and butter, and the courtyard will be full of oxen and cows and hoggish old swine, sheep, goats, cats, dogs, geese, ducks, cocks and hens, all rubbing and rooting and digging and delving and donging outside the Queen's window. Oh, dear me. There are times, my dear listener, when I feel compelled to say I did not make that shit up. It's in the pamphlets, all that shit I just said, it's in the pamphlets. I think the Poms really, really, really hate the Spanish. Now, a lot of people think this is ludicrous, and why wouldn't they, if they spare half a thought to it, but there's actually another side to Spanish society, and they would be right to be a little bit worried. Spanish rule is way harsher than the English, with lots of governors known for their cruelty. and we're a bit worried that a marriage could turn into an invasion of Spanish hard men looking to get a bit of that harsh government in here and maybe get a bit of land for themselves. We'll have English port towns writing secret letters to King Henri in France saying, hey, can you spare some troops so we can repel any Spaniards who may want to land here? What? Says King Henry. Is Mary going to marry that fucker Phil? It will be words with the English ambassador saying, hey, mate, England will be Spanish before you know it if that goes ahead. See, even the Frenchies are saying it. Mary, meantime, is saying that when she got the silly hat, she was marrying England as her first husband and England will be getting the priority in this relationship. Frenchies will be telling Mary, you can't marry Phil, you're too closely related. Yeah, you're dead right, mate. Phil, who is her second cousin, calls Mary Auntie. That makes things worse, not better, Phil, calling your bride Auntie. Well, I suppose Mike Pence calls his bride Mother, doesn't he? Yeah, but he's a bit strange. And yet, we know that you haven't gone fully back to Big Papa Pope to get a dispensation and that English law says all good, but think of your kiddies. People will use this to say they can't inherit. English nobles have gone further down the path of overly thinking about this. They're now saying that, oh, England will be Mary's dowry and Phil will own the place. Just like when nobles go and marry a wealthy widow, they get all the stuff. This is getting hugely problematic. Hop in the TARDIS, my dear listener, and go and tell those dickwits to try thinking about Mary's granny Isabella. She didn't let Ferdinand interfere with Castile one little fucking bit. No, Ferdinand, hands off Castile, mate. Mary, meantime, is being like her big example, Daddy dearest. So it's all frocks of magnificence and she's got to be in the middle of everything and she's telling everybody, look at me, look at me. Plus she's having a portrait done and minting coins with her image with the words Veritas Temporis Filia, truth the daughter of time. Noble girlies and gentlewomen are liking this. They all have to rush off to buy new frocks now to be like the boss in court. And word is also out that Mary likes boar for dinner. Yeah, we all like a bit of roast pork, don't we? Nice bit of crackling. Oh, yum. Off go our brave lads in Calais, nearly causing an international incident when they ride out into Frenchy territory looking for Mary's dinner. Frenchy peasants will do over their dogs. Oh, no. English will cut off the peasant leader's ears, and it was nearly the war of the piggy. But Mary will get a nice baked boar for Christmas dinner. Oh, it's Christmas, and entertainments, a play. It doesn't survive this thing, and I think that's a good thing that it doesn't survive. It's called The Suffering of Mankind. Yeah, the Catholic stuff's back, we've all got to suffer. It features characters like deceit, self-love, scarcity, sickness, feebleness, and deformity. Plus it's got angels and demons in the thing. Reason and plenty come in to save mankind. Yes, good government might have been a better choice. In London, it's a political play to show us what dicks Ted Seymour and John Dudley were. Then council members named Alex, Pete, Georgie and Dim... Oh, no, no, that's Clockwork Orange, isn't it? Then council members named Oppression, Insolence, Avarice and Adulation will fuck up the character named People. Yes, it's all beatings and doom for Common, but in comes Wonder Woman Queen Mary to toss over the council and rescue Common. Common will put his hand in his pocket and, magically, there's some coins in there so he can buy a new coat. What a top queen she is. It's all going well for Mary and here comes a Christmas present. A life-size portrait of Phil, which can go in a bedroom across from the drawers where we keep the royal vibrator. Now, she'll be telling everyone about how that's it. She is head over heels in love with Phil. we've had this before, haven't we? Henry fell head over heels in love with Anne of Cleves' portrait, and then he smelled her. Oh, God, he said. Oh, dear. But it's all work, work, work for Mary, and we have to figure out that title, Supreme Head of the Church in England thing. Mary isn't keen because it keeps out the big Papa Pope. She will consult, and it will be Regpole who decides it. You can't be the head of the church, Mary, because you're a girly. Duh. Now, just because we've made some improvements to the economy doesn't mean it's all champagne and reefers. In fact, it's not. We've counted up the money bin and, oh, let's see, it's negative £700,000. England is insolvent. Our guys in Flanders are busy trying to raise loans from that very sensible country that said, fuck stupid foreign wars, we're not doing that, we're into trade. Still, it's a competitive market because it's not only England who have done the stupid foreign wars and are broke, so Chuck and Henri are also looking for loans. Henri has sensibly told his nobles to turn in their plate to be made into coins. Even when we do get a loan, getting the cash to England is problematic. But I can tell you one method used more than once. You stuff a suit of armour full of cash and ship it off. Chuck Dover will cop a break with a big mob of gold turning up from the New World and a big thank you to the Indigenous Americans, I'm sure. Crime is up. Happens when the economy's in the dunny, and I'm sure politicians everywhere are saying, no, you're wrong, Dick. Crime's up because the penalties aren't harsh enough. And one place crime is up is on the Scotty border. English are saying, Scotties are stealing our cattle. Scotties are saying, English are stealing our cattle. Scotties are sneaking into English fishing territory. English are finding Scotty cattle and telling Scotties they can have them back after they pay a fine. Quarrels break out. An Englishman is accused of murdering a Scotty. Oh, that sounds a bit exaggerated, says the council. Besides, Scotties murder heaps of English, so it's all fair. That sort of stuff keeps Mary and the council busy, and there's further problems. We haven't sorted out admin, so some documents go out with Team King Ted's seal instead of Mary's, so they've got to come back and they've got to be redone, and it's all bogging the system down. Parliament and the House of Commons, where we're all worried about the economy and rising crime. No, we're not worried about that. We're worried about the Queen's marrying a Spaniard. Yeah, that's the big problem. Yeah, she can't do it, they say. Can and must, says Mary. Made a holy oath to the big old man who lives in the sky. The Speaker, though, has a big speech and he won't be keeping quiet until he's given it. Look, we're Commons and we represent ordinary English, and you know how much we hate foreigners. What if you die first without a kitty? Phil'll just take everything and he can then piss off back to Spain. Or he might just pack you up and say you're both off to the bullfights and we're left with nobody. And even if you have kitties and die, he may usurp the big chair. Now, I've given you the bullet points, but apparently this whole fuddy-duddy was a bit like King Donald, going on and round, and he's getting more than a bit irritating. Okay. Finally, Mary's turn, and she'll do a bit of spitting back at them. Since when was it the House of Commons' job to tell the monarch who they could or couldn't marry? Your behaviour is unprecedented and thoroughly inappropriate. Anyway, if you forced me to marry some shithead that I don't like, then I'd die within 3 months childless, and then where would you be? Look, I've got the good of the kingdom in mind, and I'm being guided by God, who's saying marry Phil. This is a bit extraordinary for the Commons. The King or Queen use the Chancellor to reply to the Commons. They don't speak themselves. Stephen Gardiner, be pissed, will cop a bit of lip over this, and at least that'll give the Commons something to laugh at. Thing is, Gardiner Boo Hiss has a nickname, Dr. Doubleface, and Mary is finding out that not even she can trust him. Who knows what he might have gone and said to the Commons, so Mary just said it herself. A few days later, and Mary will have it out with Gardiner Boo Hiss, saying, you need to understand, I'm not marrying Courtney, not now, not ever, and I think you put the Speaker up to that disrespectful speech, and I'm not happy. I won't be listening to any more husband talk. Stephen Gardiner Boo Hiss will be all, oh, boo-hoo-hoo, yes, it was me who put the Speaker up to it, and Courtney was my BFF in the slammer. Is that the reason you wanted me to marry the fucker, asked Mary, just because you and he are all matey? Well, just remember, he has no power, no authority. He fucks around. He's chatting the filthy Frenchies behind the back, and Phil's got fuck knows how much more gold lying around South America, and we fucking well need that. Gardner is still, boo-hoo-hoo, I swear total loyalty to whichever big strong man you pick. He's a dead shit, isn't he, that Gardner? Mary then is getting nicely assertive and picking up respect points around the place. Then we have to get some rewriting of history. It's about Henry's unlawful divorce from Catherine, and it will make baby Betty back into a bastard again. Jane Grey and Guildford Dudley need to be attainted, and oh, how Archie Tom Cranmer can be attainted while we're at it. Legislation passed to turf out all reforms during Teen King Ted's rule. So we've got to try and remember how we did magical stuff 7 years ago. And which translation of the magic book is, oh fuck, which one is it that we want now? Mary then isn't calling herself supreme head of the church in England, but she's practicing it. You won't believe it, but all this repeal legislation has led to further outbreaks of unhappiness. One guy tried to shoot a priest, but the gun misfired. Parishioners in some parts of England are rioting. Assassination threats are made against the Queen, and they're actually trying to kill Gardner Boohoo's, fair enough. Courtiers are rather nervous. Mary and baby Betty will be wandering to Vespers, and a voice will yell out, "Traitor!" Courtiers scatter. Mary will just keep strolling along. Baby Betty, though, will go all white and have a good lie down with one of her ladies giving her a nice tummy rub. Turns out the guy who yelled it was actually yelling at Gardner Boohiss and not Mary or Betty. Gardner had tossed the guy in the slammer years before for defending Catherine of Aragon, but Mary didn't know that. But she is nice and brave, isn't she? Now, the Imperial Ambassador has some advice for Mary. You've got four enemies. One is heretics and schismatics, two John Dudley's guys, three Frenchies and Scotties, four Baby Betty. Oh no, Baby Betty. Never take your eye off this mob because they certainly have their eye on you and are looking for an opportunity. Be on your guard. Now what do we think, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls? Are they really a threat? Heretics and schismatics, or we're really just Protestants, aren't they? They're on the rise, letting Mary know they're not happy. Mary is trying to slowly wind stuff back, but winding back can be harder than putting stuff in the first place. Archie Cranmer was just under house arrest, but wrote an attack on the old magic show. That got him out of house arrest and into the slammer, with former Bishop of London Ridley and our old preacher mate Latimer. We all know that Cranmer's piss weak, but his defiance is helping to stir up the mob. Parliament will come up with the brilliant plan, oh fuck me, brilliant plan to have a theological debate. Four Protestants versus six Catholics, and you may as well debate whether Harry Potter could defeat Captain America. These guys will get close to a physical dust-up, and it's all just insults, leaving Parliament and the general population rather disgusted. So second on his list was Dudley's mob. John Dudley and two of his hard men have been executed. His sons and daughter-in-law Jane are in the slammer. But others have been pardoned, and some of those guys are on the council. Mary might regret that. Enemy number three, the Frenchies and the Scotties. Oh, well spotted, that ambassador. Fuck, yeah, that was difficult, wasn't it? Mary would never have thought of that all by herself. And finally, baby Betty. Well, let's start with them as girls back in the past. Catherine taught Mary that Betty was a bastard, and we hate her. While Anne Boleyn taught baby Betty that Mary was a bastard and, well, we hate her. So far, so good. They've had a go at getting on, but it's a bit hard to put kitty hate away. So, my dear listener, do not teach your kitties to hate anyone. It might come back and bite them on the bum. Mary also had it that Betty's dad was the long-dead musician Mark Smeaton and not the glorious mad Welsh king. Then we have the thing going on with Tom Seymour and baby Betty's bum. And for Mary, the virgin Goody Two-Shoes, that's a sign that Betty was a bit free and loose like her demonic mother. Baby Betty has no virtue and is unfit for the big chair. The ambassador agrees that she's like Anne Boleyn. She can bewitch you and make you do her will. And she's looking to marry Courtney to get her closer to the big chair. Mary's 37, baby Betty's 20. Mary's Catholic, Betty's Protestant. Worst of all, word on the street is Catholics might be having their fun now, but baby Betty will make it right when it's her turn. Mary has insisted that Betty go to the old magic show, but thinks Betty hasn't converted, so will ask her. Betty will say she goes to the magic show of her own free will and without fear, hypocrisy or dissimulation, and if you like, I'll make a public statement saying just that. Well done, Betty. Go and do the Catholic stuff. If that's what you've got to do, do it. All the while, though, Betty was trembling while she was making that little speech. Mary thinks it's because she's timid and knows a place. The ambassador thinks it's a sure sign she's lying. Don't get sucked in by those bloody Frenchies with their croissants and coffee and existential philosophers. The imperial ambassador was dead right about the Frenchies. The French ambassador has a very large network of spies. He's also got the resources of the Venetian ambassador, who is anti-Chuck, so the Venetian ambassador is willing to share information. The French ambassador's top spy is Sir John Lee, who is in with Gardiner and the team of nobles who are about to get the marriage to Phil actually done. Our ambassador is now fully aware of the plans and can plot to toss a cracker or two into the project. We're working on the treaty, which sensibly says each can enjoy the other's lands, but only have authority on their own turf. But we have to pander to male pride so Phil can assist Mary in running the show in England. It's nicely vague. Phil is not to attempt to appoint garlic-eating Spaniards in the English court and is to obey English law. If Mary dies childless, then Phil will just fuck off. If he goes first, then Mary gets to keep a generous dowry. Phil won't bring England into war with the Frenchies. Now, Phil's existing son, Don Carlos, will inherit Spain and the European stuff. The eldest son of Phil and Mary will inherit England and the Low Countries. If they only have a daughter, she can inherit England, but not the Low Countries, unless she marries someone who Don Carlos likes. If Don Carlos dies without any heirs, then Mary and Phil's heir will get the lot. Woohoo, jackpot. England, Lowlands, Spain, and the New World. Half a planet, just about. This is actually a pretty good deal for both Phil and Mary. It does omit anything about what if Mary dies with a kitty too young for a silly hat. Yeah. Generally, that would be the husband who would take over as regent, so perhaps we just don't want to spell that one out. Phil will sign his document, then immediately sign another document invalidating it. He swears in this document that the treaty was invalid without force to bind him. Sounds like total shit, doesn't it? But it's not actually that unusual for European royals. They just don't want to be tied to anything. There's a problem with all this. Phil was not consulted on that treaty, and Chuck is pretty much treating him like a little kiddie. He's being told what he can pack and how many people can go and make sure they're guys who can behave properly and don't spend all your money at once. And the servants need to be honest and responsible and not worsen our already crap reputation with the English. And this is what food and drink you need to pack on your ships, and be friendly to the English sailors and demonstrate your love and joy at meeting Mary both in public and private, and send her a ring now and tell her that you love her. Like, this guy's 26 and he should know all this stuff, but yeah, Chuck's treating him like a bloody toddler. In come the Imperial Commissioners to get the English to sign off on the treaty. These guys know their business, so they've brought plenty of cash to bribe the councillors. They know that every one of them will put up some sort of objection to be overcome. Councillors see that as their work, in order to get that nice bribe as a reward. It will go well enough with the council, putting up their little fights and then rolling over when the cash comes out. But the servants of the Spaniards are copping a hard time on the streets. It will be slanders and arrests, and Mary will be depressed knowing that her plans to marry Phil was the cause of so much unrest for the common types. She's supposed to be loyal to the common types. Supposed to be. There will be a plot, and don't tell me you weren't expecting that. Courtney's involved, and the plot was to depose Mary and put Courtney and baby Betty on the big chair. It seemed that baby Betty may have known about it, but wasn't actually promoting it. just chill and see what happens was her thing. Our plotters are looking to raise 4 simultaneous rebellions on Palm Sunday. That's the 18th of March. Leader of the plotters, Sir Peter Carew, would be out spruking up Spanish all rape and murder English women to the townspeople of Exeter. The warrant will go out for his arrest, but he's just going to nick off. With Carew in hiding, the rest of the plotters will attempt to set off the rebellion early. Sir Thomas Wyatt, and there's a blast from the past, isn't there? But he's not our old Sir Thomas Wyatt who messed around with Anne Boleyn and Tom Cromwell and wrote poetry. No, this is his son, Sir Thomas Wyatt, who is a bit like his dad. Like his dad in that he's broke and he bangs lots of hot chicks. This Thomas Wyatt had been brought up by our old mate Tom Howard, Duke of Norfolk, and was mates with the executed Henry Howard. Now, you might recall that Tom Wyatt's dad, Tom Wyatt, got to do a lot of ambassador work and at one stage went to Spain, taking his dear lad Tom with him. On that trip, young Tom got to witness the joys, fun and frivolity of the Spanish Inquisition firsthand. And things were a bit dodgy at that time, so both he and his dad were under some risk of becoming rather directly involved with those dear, sweet, kind, loving, gentle brothers of St. Dominic. So this Tom, and probably his dad for all I know, but the point is this Tom really, really hates the Spanish. Can't stand them. Now Tom had been a supporter of Mary against Team Lady Jane Grey, but now she's intending to marry a fucking Spaniard. He's gone to Team Rebellion. Now the other thing you might recall is that the Wyatt family lands are in Kent, where the beer is beautiful and the people just love to rebel. Okay, I think we've cleared up who Sir Tom Wyatt is. Oh, it's breaking news. 21st of January 1554, and Sir Peter Carew, Member for Parliament for Devon, has been arrested and brought in for a little chat with Stephen Gardiner Buhis. He has confirmed that a plot exists to raise 4 separate rebellions to march on London and depose the Queen, while a fleet of filthy Frenchies will arrive to prevent the landing of any Dago Spanish ships. Now, Sir Tom Wyatt is actually unaware that Carew's been arrested. He should have listened to this news broadcast, shouldn't he? So, Wyatt's off raising the men of Kent. Off he goes to Rochester to make a mighty and powerful speech that he's actually failed to prepare. He's not even sure what the objectives are of the rebellion, so it'll be all shit like Spaniards are coming, rapists, drug dealers, and some, I suppose, are very fine people. Kentish mob are now on the lookout for these Spanish. Where are they? Where are they? They'll be here any minute. No, they're not coming. There's nobody coming. Okay, says Wyatt, the rebellion is to swap queens again. Oh, all right, said the mob. Now we know that there's at least some sort of objective. That'll be good enough for 2,000 or 3,000 of them to rebel and march on London. Shit's just got real for Mary in London, who are expecting actually 4 mobs, aren't they? They're expecting 4 mobs to rise and turn up in London. And then we get the worst news that King Henri has sent a message to the Scotties for them to invade at the same time. See, I told you those Frenchies aren't our friends. Tensions are mounting. All this news is coming in from the Imperial Ambassador, so I don't know what we'd do without him. More news from him. The Frenchies have 24 ships and 18 infantry companies on the coast of Normandy ready to sail over and invade. Oh, fuck, this is like Bill the Bastard all over again. But a day or two we'll see that Wyatt doesn't have that many guys, and while he's all the Spanish are coming to rape and kill, other officials are telling these rebels, hey, look, Wyatt's full of shit. And if he's worried about Spaniards invading, then what the fuck are you doing heading towards London and not going down the coast to stop him? Mary is offering pardon, so why not go home and put your feet up? And oddly enough, some of the mob, not all of them, but some of the mob will get that logic. If we're worried about an invasion, we're going the wrong fucking way. Before you know it, this lot are all cheering, God save Queen Mary, and yelling out, Wyatt's a traitor. Well, we're not done yet. That was just one mob and not all of them went home. Some headed off to join Wyatt, and in comes our ancient Tom Howard, Duke of Norfolk, serious hard man, and he's up for a dust-up. And about 500 of his Londoners will just defect to Team Wyatt. Oh, dear. Tom Howard's going to get done. He'll have to make a strategic retreat back to London and send Mary's morale down the dunny. Mary will turn to her counsellors for advice. Why the fuck would you do that? Why the fuck would you do that? You might as well turn to the US Senate. And these counsellors will just squabble and be useless. There you go. It's Gardner's fault for his hardcore religious policies. It's Paget's fault for supporting a marriage to a filthy foreigner. And the Imperial Ambassador will tell Mary, some of your counsellors are supporting this revolt, you know. What's a girl to do? Worse, of course. When news first broke out about the rebellion, Mary told the council to get her a bodyguard, a large one. And they haven't done it. There's nobody she can trust to do anything, and she hasn't got an army, and rebels will soon be at the gates. At least we've managed to ramp up security in London, and the council, having had their squabble, are thinking about the safety of the Queen. That's nice to spare a thought there. Should she stay in the Tower, we'll retreat to Windsor. One bright spark will say, I know, she should disguise herself as a peasant, Sheila, and hide out in the country. Oh, what a fuck knuckle. These guys are paid to come up with shit like this. Another will say, let's sneak her over to France. Oh, fuck me. Imperial commissioners will discreetly fuck off. Everything's turning to shit. Mary needs to take charge, and she most certainly will. She's not leaving London, no way. Off she goes to Guildhall, which is the headquarters for the We Need to Resist the Rebellion thinkers. I am come unto you in mine own person to tell you that which you already see and know. That is how traitorously and rebelliously a number of Kentishmen have assembled themselves against us and you. Yeah, then she'll give them a chat about why pretending we're under threat of invasion when it's just standard usurp the big chair. Now, loving subjects, what I am, you well know. I am your queen, to whom at my coronation, where I was wedded to the realm, you promised your allegiance and obedience unto me, and that I am the right and true inheritor of the crown of this realm of England. I take all Christendom to witness. My father, as you know, possessed the same regal state which rightly is descended unto me. It's on to, I'm not getting married out of lust or self-will, but to make an heir to the big chair to govern after I've gone to heaven. I cannot tell how naturally the mother loveth the child, for I was never the mother of any, but certainly if a prince and governor may as naturally and earnestly love his subjects as a mother do love a child, then assure yourselves that I, being your lady and mistress, do as earnestly and tenderly love and favour you. Are you boo-hoo-hooing, my dear listener? The London guys are. And now, good subjects, pluck up your hearts and like true men stand fast against these rebels, both our enemies and yours, and fear them not, for I assure you I fear them nothing at all. Oh, God save Queen Mary! Oh, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be... Oh, I'm going into Shakespeare again, sorry. Only 10 years now to wait for Shakespeare to be born. I hope I didn't take the gloss off Mary's speech, because she did very well. Londoners are boo-hoo-hooing and cheering at the same time. Mary has done it. I thought we should have a Te Deum, but unlike Mary, I got Spaniards to sing that one. Was that rude of me? I don't care. 3rd of February, and Wyatt and the mob are in Suffolk with some London-type soldiers, going off to join them. There is, of course, the river between the mob and London. That's Suffolk is on the other side of the river to the city. London will panic. Shops boarded up, goods removed from display. looking a bit like a US election. People are running around getting their weapons, doors being bolted, and all the boats are brought to the city side of the river. Mary's speech is being read on street corners, and we're all going to settle down and wait for the worst. Wyatt has two cannon trained on London Bridge. Londoners have four cannon trained on Wyatt. The big guns in the tower are trained on Suffolk. Should we send in some shots, we ask Mary. Nah, she says, innocent smelly tots would cop it. But Wyatt can see he's totally outgunned, so he's off to Kingston to cross the Thames there. That's what happened with Bill the Bastard back in 1066. By dawn on the 4th of February, Tom and the mob are approaching London from the west. Mary is in Westminster, and the council will say, "Save yourself, take the barge to the tower, run away." "No way," says Mary. "Well, I've got William Herbert here to protect me, and he's got the gentleman pensioners." In come Wyatt and the mob, and they won't find a lot of resistance. He'll get to Ludgate, where we have Sir William Howard, who will hold against him. Wyatt will turn back, but it was a trap, and now he's blocked off. Wyatt knows he's done, and by 5 p.m. he's in the sunner. I've made it all sound nice and quick and easy, but it was actually 13 hours, and if we keep in mind this mob had bugger all in communications, it was all very tense for Mary. Information that did come in could be totally dodgy, like, "Oh, look, some of our brave guys have gone over to the rebels," and shit like that. Just to help out, Mary's ladies were running around screaming stuff like, "We're all going to die!" Now, Mary apparently stayed very calm, saying things like, "My captains would never deceive me, and even if they did, God is on my team." One of White's guys had managed to shoot an arrow into the court at Whitehall, causing soldiers to rush into Mary saying, "Oh, we've been done over, run away, run away." Mary told those guys to shut the fuck up and told the courtiers to join her in prayers to baby Jesus. Now, joining Wyatt in the summer will be Sir William Thomas, one of the main conspirators and the only one who'd been up for assassination of Mary. The rest just wanted to give her a nice time in a retirement home for old Sheila's where she could play bingo. Sir William will try stabbing himself in the chest, but will fail to die. Other captives will be brought in, including a big fat catch. Duke of Suffolk, Henry Grey, and father of Lady formerly Queen Jane Grey, who was hiding in a hollow tree. You can hide from sight, but that won't stop a sniffer dog from sniffing you out, Henry Grey. It will now be a few months of hangings, lots and lots of hangings. Nice new gallows built at every city gate and all the top tourist spots around town. We'll share the love with gallows at Cheapside, Fleet Street, Smithfield, Holborn, London Bridge, and let's not forget Summer Tower Hill. It's going to get very smelly because we just hang these guys and then leave them to rot. The soldiers who had joined the rebels will be hung right outside their front doors so their family can say hi to that corpse every time they go in or out. There will be a mass parting though, so plenty got off with a warning. All this is going to be really, really bad news for Lady formerly Queen Jane Grey and Guildford Dudley. They had been through a trial when Mary came to London and took over the big chair, and of course they were found guilty and sentenced to death. Mary's just been keeping in the tower. It looks like she didn't want to kill them. But now with Jane Grey's dad having rebelled, Jane and Guildford look a bit dangerous. Not themselves, but they're a symbol for anybody that wants to rebel. As long as they're alive, the symbol's alive. Back when they were first arrested, we had a message from the ambassador, Super Saucy Chuck, saying Jane will do a bit of time in the slammer and then be pardoned. But things have changed. Execution will be scheduled for the 9th of February, but that won't happen. Mary has sent in her chaplain to convert Jane to the true faith, the real one. So Jane's going to hang out with the chaplain for a while. Initially, Jane will be pissed off for this because she follows the true faith, the real one. Just not the real one that Mary follows, but she will get friendly with Mary's guy.
Why, Dr. Fecknam.
So, you remember me.
Why have you brought him here to me?
To help you to decide, my lady, if the next occasion when you leave this room will be the last. Which it will be, unless I can persuade you to renounce your most pernicious heresy.
She promised. No conditions.
That was before your father led an insurrection in your name. So, will you talk to me?
Yeah, stupid question, really. If Jane's doing the real Christian thing, then why would she want to convert to the wrong one? I don't know. 12th of February, 1554. Jane can watch Guildford go out of the tower, then come back in two bits. Yeah, his body and his head. All she had said was, "Oh, Guildford, Guildford." Jane's turn, and off she goes with a new buddy, the chaplain, to hold her hand. "Good people, I am come hither to die, and by a law I am condemned to the same. The fact indeed against the Queen's Highness was unlawful, and the consenting thereunto by me. But touching the procurement and desire thereof by me, or on my behalf, I do wash my hands thereof in innocence, before God, and the face of you, good Christian people, this day." Yeah, so Jane's saying she knows she's got to die, she did the wrong thing, but she was forced into it, she didn't want to do it. That seems pretty fair sort of assessment. Then she'll recite Psalm 51. "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion, blot out my transgressions, wash away my iniquity, and cleanse me from sin," and so on, and yada blah. And I'm not sure why she picked Psalm 51. It's one about naughty King David having a good old banging of Bathsheba. And why wouldn't he? God, the creator of all things, created Bathsheba to be a total super hottie and extraordinarily bangable. So why would God do that then expect people wouldn't bang her? I don't know. Perhaps Jane did Psalm 51 because Sir St. Tom Moore had done it at his head removal ceremony. Okay, she's got that off her chest and so will blindfold herself, but didn't have a good look to see where the lock was first. So off she goes, poor love, saying, "What shall I do? Where is it?" Oh dear.
"Now kneel, please, my lady." "Lay you down."
"Where is it? Where is it? What do I do?
Okay, Jane, no need to panic. It was all easy in the end, wasn't it? What that movie missed was just before that axe did come down, she did the old Luke quote. It's very popular when you're about to die. "Lord, into thy hands I commend my spirit," and then bang, yeah, Jane and Guildford could be reunited at St. Peter ad Vincula. Jane, though, will live on as a Protestant martyr once we toss up the old faith again, and she'll appear in lots of ballads. In about 25 years, a play will be written where she is the most beautiful girl in the whole wide world. She is an innocent who says, "No silly hat for me." But Guildford will say, "If you don't take the silly hat, I will kill myself." We'll have more plays over the years, including stuff about the Protestant martyr Jane. 19th century, and we've invented ladies' magazines. Aren't you ladies pleased about that? Jane will be a frequent visitor in those ladies' magazines, little stories about her. And then some kiddie books will start up with Lady Jane Grey stories in them. 1836, and it's an opera, Giovanna Grey. Along come the USA type evangelicals, and they love Jane as a kind of female saint, if they had saints, for young women. The French Revolution, and we'll get the famous painting of Jane Grey's execution. And for lady listeners who might be interested in this stuff, in that painting, it's Marie Antoinette's undies they used to put on Jane. There's lots of paintings of Jane, pretty much all done years after her death. The only one we think is a genuine portrait of Jane was on the website and Facebook page, I think, with last week's episode. Jane will get a bit part in Mark Twain's novel, The Prince and the Pauper. Move on to the 20th century and we get lots of Jane Grey novels. She'll even meet Doctor Who in a short story, The 9-Day Queen. We've had 3 Jane Grey movies plus 6 Janes in movie versions of The Prince and the Pauper. So she's not forgotten there. But for us, it's just another tragic story with a teenager dead from a parent's ambition. If it helps ease your pain, my dear listener, I can tell you that Henry Grey, her dad, will have her head popping off 11 days later, allowing her mum to marry the master of the horse and live happily ever after. Oh, not so fast, Dick. Who gets to live happily ever after? Nobody, that's who. So Frances Brandon was now, of course, totally broke. She's still a duchess, but a broke duchess. Then some fuckers assisted by Frenchy thinking will start making a move for her to marry that Edward Courtney. And oh dear, that could get us right back into trouble, couldn't it? To make sure that didn't happen, Frances hitched up with the master of the horse. That was all terribly safe. Now those two will have 3 kiddies, 2 stillborn and 1 who died soon after birth. And at 42, Frances Brandon, daughter of Charles Brandon and Mary Tudor, will die. But just before we leave Jane Grey behind us forever, and just in case you decide to have a crack at a Jane Grey novel or movie, let me tell you now that the quote from Jane about how awful her parents were was written after death. Yeah. Frances Brandon was actually noted for her kindness and generosity, and there's no reason to think Jane had a harsh upbringing. Nor is there any reason to think that Jane was kept in the dark about the whole silly hat thing. Okay, done. Bring on Thomas Wyatt. He's going to have a trial. Lasted about 4 or 5 minutes. Who needs time? He's guilty. He will score a beheading, drawn and quartered. Seems fine to me. Who cares about being drawn and quartered once your head's off? Maybe the crowd, I suppose, but somebody must have thought it was a nasty thing to do. Well, I couldn't give a rat's arse. If I'm dead, then it wouldn't matter one little bit. There was that even nastier one, wasn't there, after they were dead? It was, I think it was Ted Four, wasn't it, our Yorkist usurper, who had some guys' heads off, then stick a spike up through their guts and out the arse and stick the head back on the spike so it looks like their head is coming out of their arse. Yeah, very good for a laugh. But it wouldn't have bothered me at all if I was dead. Let's move on. Nah, hang on. Let's move back just a tick. Wyatt had done the scaffold confession thingy, but wanted everyone to know that this rebellion was nothing to do with Courtney or baby Betty. Wyatt's missus and kiddies are now broke, but Mary will be kind, giving them a bit of an annuity and a little bit of Wyatt's lands. Eventually, when the eldest lad is a man, he'll get the full lands back. And that's George Wyatt. And George Wyatt will have a son, Sir Francis Wyatt, who will be governor of Virginia, USA. He will organise the General Assembly of 1619, which was the first legislative body in America. The privileges of the assembly will be written into a constitution, and there's another first for St. Francis, the first constitution in America. And there you go. We can move on. How's this going down in Europe? We can read the ambassador's reports. They're saying, oh, well, look, it's all chaos in England. Huge uprisings, soldiers flooding to the rebels, Mary's about to be tossed out, and the Venetian even has thousands of Spanish soldiers are wandering around England. This is tough because English, like all English, including merchants, can't get loans with word of the huge instability going on. This is bad for business. In Antwerp, here come the runaway-type rebels saying, it's all true, it's all true, England's going to the dogs. Rebels will win any tick of the clock. Yeah, so why did you run away should be the question, if rebels are going to win any tick of the clock. Finally, word does get to Antwerp that it's all done and dusted, and we can have cheering and bonfires. Europe will get the news that it was a fart and a cyclone, but still just goes to show what can happen if you have a weak girlie sitting on the big chair. And never, ever mention that Mary put down the rebellion because we're sure some man must have somehow done it. No, that's not true, you idiots. The king or queen is responsible for all wins and losses. That's how it works, with the exception, of course, of King Donald the Magnificent, who will tell you he did an exceptional job and nobody else could have done a better job, and anything that went wrong was down to the losers and haters. But we do need to look at the aftermath of this little rebellion. White had been a dick attacking London without the co-conspirators raising rebellions to join him. Mary is one, but it's exposed a problem. Lots and lots of people didn't join White's rebellion, but hey, who gives a fuck? Because equally, they didn't all rush to join Team Mary. Not taking up the arms against rebels is a bit of a fuck you to the Queen. According to the Europeans, Mary has been way too lenient in not killing Courtney, the Frenchie ambassador Knowles, and baby Betty. Betty will go to the slammer for 3 months. Courtney had ended up fighting for Team Mary, but that just showed he was pretty fucking useless at fighting, like he's useless at everything else, so he'll be allowed to go overseas. And Knowles is an ambassador, so a bit hard to punish him. But Mary will pop him into the slammer, just to let him know who's fucking in charge. Now Mary and the Imperial Ambassador will get themselves a nice double agent who's got the key to the Frenchie cipher. So now we can just read all their correspondence. Fantastic. Team Imperials in London will also harass Knowles, the Frenchie Ambassador, and Team Frenchies. Knowles will conclude in one of his dispatches that God was going to allow Mary and Phil to marry as a punishment to them both. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, just a little bit of Yo-Yo Ma there, banging out a bit of bark to get us into some historical fiction, and this week it'll be the movie Jane Grey, put out in 1986. I did see it years ago and I thought I'd watch it again so I could talk about it this week. Not that I sort of did want to watch it again, and I didn't. I didn't because it's a romance, and I did because the star of the show is Helena Bonham Carter. And I'll just mention to you, my dear listener, don't tell anybody else, but I've got a bit of a thing for Helena Bonham Carter. I think she's rather marvellous. So I've got Helena Bonham Carter and Carrie Elwes as a very pretty Guildford Dudley. Who else is in it that you might know? Oh, Jean-Luc Picard. Patrick Stewart is the nasty Henry Gray, Jane's dad. So, look, it kind of does a story. You've got Dudley there. It'll be Dudley who convinces Kitty Teen King Ted to make Jane the heir instead of Mary, which doesn't seem to be correct. It seems like it was definitely Ted's own idea. The parents, Jane's parents, are awful. She is forced to marry Guildford Dudley. She doesn't want to. He's just a pisshead. But then they go off to start their life together and start talking. They find out that they both got a social conscience and they both just wish they could do things for the poor. And while they're wishing different things that they could do for the poor, they're smashing glassware for some fucking reason. I'm thinking, shit, you guys, you know where you live. This glassware is worth an absolute fortune. Don't smash it, sell it, and give it the money to the poor if you want to do that. But, yeah, it's not that sort of movie. So we'll go through the thing, and instead of White's rebellion, it'll be her dad, Henry Gray, rebelling. I guess they couldn't afford another actor and couldn't be bothered going through all the story of why it was Tom White who rebelled. But anyway, look, it's a curiosity, I think. I can't really recommend it because, as I say, it's more of a romance than history. Called Lady Jane from 1986. Go for it if you want, don't if you don't. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. And I reckon we should go out with the track Go Up by Cassius and Pharrell Williams, featuring the luscious Cat Power. Hope to see you next week. Bye.
Everybody, close your eyes, ascend and go up. Everybody, close your eyes, ascend and go up.
Everybody. jealousy be? I don't know.